Welcome to my Pops podcast. His name is John Young.
As you can tell from that wonderful intro, one of the greatest blessings in my life, my granddaughter, is in the building as I record this week. Welcome to the End of Innocence. In this week's episode, we continue to cover the heroes of the research community, the ones that paved the way for researchers like myself today. Just like last week when we covered Dr. Cyril Wett, this week we look at another researcher who started investigating the assassination from almost day one. Mark Lane was an American attorney, a New York state legislator, a civil rights activist, and a Vietnam War crimes investigator. Lane is best known as a leading researcher, author, and conspiracy theorist on the assassination of President John F. Kennedy. Lane authored 10 books on the JFK assassination, including Rush to Judgment, the 1966 number one best-selling critique of the Warren Commission.
Something has happened in the motorcade route. There's numerous people running up the hill alongside Elm Street, there by the Simmons Freeway. Several police officers are rushing up the hill at this time. Stand by.
From Dallas, Texas, the flash, apparently official, President Kennedy died at 1 p.m. Central Standard Time, some 38 minutes ago.
This just in from Dallas, Homicide Chief Captain Will Fritz said today the assassination case against Lee Harvey Oswald is cinched. He said flatly, "This is the man that killed President Kennedy, 24-year-old Lee Harvey Oswald."
No, they're taking me in because of the fact that I live in Missouri. I'm just a patsy. Lee Oswald has been shot. There's the man with a gun.
The assassination of President John F. Kennedy in Dallas on November 22, 1963, remains a subject of contention and dispute more than 60 years after the event took place. Mark Lane, who was a New York attorney and was at the center of that dispute almost immediately after the killing, and remained there for the last 53 years of his life. Lane is considered one of the early researchers who had the courage to challenge the Warren Commission's findings. In many ways, Mark Lane and his work on the assassination is one of the reasons I'm here today doing this podcast. I had the honor to meet and spend some time with Lane because of my relationship with Penn Jones Jr. Lane is one of several researchers that truly helped me kickstart some of my own research into the assassination. His 1966 book, Rush to Judgment, was an indictment of the Warren Commission's finding that Lee Harvey Oswald was Kennedy's lone crazed assassin. It became the first best-selling book to suggest an untold story of the assassination. Lane was a relentless researcher, and his activism and pursuit of proving a conspiracy in the killing of John F. Kennedy exposed him to much criticism. He was often accused of sensationalism, which could obscure the most valuable parts of his work. His career might stand as a metaphor for the chaotic web that surrounds the assassination itself. Lane was drawn to the assassination after reading early press reports of witnesses contradicting the official version that assumed Oswald's guilt. As a lawyer, he realized the evidence was shaky, with no cross-examination on Oswald's behalf, and he quickly wrote a 10,000-word article titled Oswald's Innocence, A Lawyer's Brief. The only publisher he found for this article was a small, far-left weekly, the National Guardian, based in New York. Published less than 4 weeks after the assassination, Lane's article in the December 19th issue of the National Guardian attempted to rebut various assertions made by Dallas County District Attorney Henry Wade regarding the assassination and to offer a defense of Oswald. Oswald's mother, Marguerite Oswald, reached out to Mark Lane after reading the article. In December of 1963, Mark Lane traveled to Dallas to question Oswald's family, and 3 days later he suggested to Marguerite Oswald that she sue the city of Dallas for the death of her son. Lane said, quote, "It would be an attempt to give Lee Oswald in death what he could not obtain in life, a fair trial," end quote. Marguerite Oswald announced on January 14, 1964, that she had hired Lane to represent her son before the Warren Commission. After Lane notified the commission that he had been retained by Marguerite Oswald to represent her deceased son, the commission's general counsel, J. Lee Rankin, replied, quote, "The commission does not believe that it would be useful or desirable to permit an attorney representing Lee Harvey Oswald to have access to the investigative materials within the possession of the commission or to participate in any hearings to be conducted by the commission," end quote. Although Earl Warren reversed that position with a statement released on February 25th that said Walter E. Craig, president of the American Bar Association, had been appointed by the commission to represent the interest of Lee Harvey Oswald, Lane remarked that he still considered himself to be Oswald's counsel. Mark Lane testified before the Warren Commission on March 4, 1964, and again on July 2, 1964. In his March 4 testimony, Lane testified that he had contacted witness Harold Markham during the 5 days preceding his appearance before the commission and that she had described Tippett's killer as a, quote, "short, a little on the heavy side, and his hair was somewhat bushy," end quote. Lane added, quote, "I think it is fair to state that an accurate description of Oswald would be average height, quite slender, with thin and receding hair," end quote. At the beginning of April, Marguerite Oswald asked Lane for a copy of his report. She also asked him to stop any organized effort on behalf of her son through his Citizens Committee of Inquiry and terminated his representation. During the July 2nd hearing, exchanges between Mark Lane and Chief Justice Earl Warren were often heated. After Lane reiterated his request to appear before the commission as Oswald's counsel, Warren reminded him that the commission had already denied his request to act as counsel, explaining that Marina Oswald was Lee Harvey Oswald's legal representative and that she was already represented by counsel. It was observed that Chief Justice Earl Warren displayed significant contempt for Lane. According to biographer Ed Gray, Warren deemed Lane, quote, "a publicity seeker who played fast and loose with the subject," end quote. Warren maintained that the commission had investigated all leads and left no witness unheard. Okay. Lane's critique of the Warren Commission, Rush to Judgment, was published in 1966. The book became a number one bestseller and spent 29 weeks on the New York Times bestseller list. It was made into a documentary film in 1967. Rush to Judgment criticizes in detail the work and conclusions of the Warren Commission. Lane questions, among other things, the Warren Commission's conclusion that 3 shots were fired from the Texas School Book Depository and focuses on the witnesses who had recounted seeing or hearing shots coming from the grassy knoll in Dealey Plaza. Lane questions whether Oswald was guilty of the murder of policeman J.D. Tippett shortly after the Kennedy murder. Lane also states that none of the Warren Commission's firearm experts were able to duplicate Oswald's shooting feat. Jim Garrison, the New Orleans district attorney, was one of those who was greatly impressed by Rush to Judgment. He later claimed that Lane's work, quote, "sparked my general doubts about the assassination, but more importantly, they led me into specific areas of inquiry," end quote. Garrison would recruit Lane to help him investigate the case. He carried out interviews with witnesses who had dealings with Lee Harvey Oswald in New Orleans and Mexico City. Lane also talked with Helen Markham about her identification of Oswald as the killer of Dallas policeman J.D. Tippett.
Mr. Lane, in view of the latest developments, especially in New Orleans, I wonder if you could tell us what you think about this new investigation started by Mr. Garrison.
I think it may very well be the most significant event in terms of an investigation since the assassination took place. The rest of us have been able to raise questions about the situation. In my book, I make reference to the matter of some strange meetings which took place in New Orleans and activities which emanated from there, evidently. But I could do little more than raise questions. When I tried to speak with the chief of the New Orleans Intelligence Bureau, Lieutenant Martello, he refused to speak with me. Dean Andrews, who's an attorney in New Orleans, who knew Oswald, who knew of Oswald's relationships with the Cubans in the area, agreed to speak with me and to participate in a filmed interview for our film. But when we arrived at his office, he said he had received word from Washington that he would be in serious trouble. He might even suffer physical harm if he did grant an interview to us. So we could do a little more than raise these questions, but Mr. Garrison, of course, can make arrests and can compel testimony and can cause a trial to take place, and evidently he was planning to do this.
Where did this word from Washington come from?
That's all that Mr. Andrews told us. He testified before the commission, Mr. Andrews, said that Oswald had come to see him about changing the nature of his discharge from a less than honorable discharge to an honorable discharge. And Andrews said that the FBI did not like that statement. And in fact, when Andrews testified before the commission, he said, when the FBI is on you, they're like the plague, eternal, cancer, never ending. And he said, because of that, he finally said to the FBI, all right, write whatever you want about me, but please just leave me alone. And he capitulated. That was his testimony before the Warren Commission, but the commission did not consider that to be significant enough to investigate further. Evidently, Mr. Garrison is a bit more curious than the commission was.
How do you think you can help Garrison, or how do you plan to help him?
Well, I've been at this now for more than 3 years. I've made many trips to Dallas, 9 trips now. We've had a squad of independent volunteer investigators who've gone to Dallas, more than 25 now, for the last more than 3 years. We've compiled a mass of information. Some of it led to dead ends insofar as our investigation was concerned, because we could not go any further if the witness refused to speak with us. I'll make all of this information, everything I have, everything I know about this case, available to Mr. Garrison. He seems to be interested in the matter, and I hope it will be of some use to him.
Mm-hmm. What is your feeling, based on the knowledge that you have now, on the death in New Orleans of this man, David Ferry?
Well, it does seem strange that so many of the witnesses who had information related to the assassination of the president or to the murder of Officer Tippit have died mysterious and strange deaths, and many of them were violent deaths. It seems strange that Mr. Ferry, who was evidently about to be arrested by Mr. Garrison, took his own life just a week before that arrest was to be made.
It's your understanding that he did take his own life?
Well, this is the statement that I hear from New Orleans. Of course, I have not conducted any investigation. I hear that Mr. Garrison has made that statement. He has conducted, at this point, a cursory examination of anything. In any event, we understand he's dead.
On March 2, 1967, Garrison announced the arrest of Clay Shaw on charges of conspiring to assassinate President Kennedy. The jury found Shaw not guilty of conspiring to assassinate Kennedy. Mark Lane believed the prosecution was mishandled. Lane said, quote, Shaw was acquitted, Garrison roundly condemned, and the movement for the facts set further back. Later, I was able to secure evidence that might have been useful to Garrison in the Shaw case, but of course, the case would not be tried again. The evidence proved that Shaw, who had known Oswald, had worked for the CIA, a fact that Shaw had successfully denied at his trial, end quote. Mark Lane died in his home in Charlottesville, Virginia on May 10, 2016. According to his friend Sue Herndon, he had a heart attack. Mark Lane's first two marriages ended in divorce. He is survived by his wife Patricia and 3 daughters. Lane told me during one of our conversations back in 2009 that if his life was on the line and he had to say whether he thought Lee Harvey Oswald killed President Kennedy or not, his answer would be, quote, absolutely not, end quote. Here are some highlights from his 1967 film Rush to Judgment, which remains one of the best documentary films on the assassination because of the interviews of the first-hand account witnesses to the assassination.
My name is Lee Harvey Oswald, O-S-W-A-L-D.
Positively know nothing about this situation here. I would like to have legal representation.
Well, I was questioned by a judge. However, I protested at that time that I was not allowed legal representation. But during that very short and sweet hearing, I really don't know what the situation is about. Nobody has told me anything except that I'm accused of murdering a policeman. I know nothing more than that, and I do request for someone to come forward to give me a legal assistance.
Did you kill the president?
No, I've not been charged with that. In fact, nobody has said that to me yet. The first thing I heard about was when the newspaper reporters in the hall asked me that question.
You have. I don't know what this is all about.
You kill the president?
Also, I didn't keep a gun in the
Shoot the president?
I work in that building.
Were you in the building at the time?
Naturally, if I work in that building, yes, sir.
Back up, man.
No, they're taking me in because of the fact that I live in Missouri. I'm just a patsy.
Here comes Oswald down the hall again.
You find that rifle?
That's as fast as you people have been given, but I emphatically deny these charges.
Oswald has hustled through a doorway.
I have not committed any
acts of violence. And he told anyone he planned to kill the president.
He hasn't admitted killing the president to anyone. Well, I don't know what he said. He says he didn't do it. We're still working on the evidence. This has been a joint effort by the Secret Service, the Federal Bureau of Investigation, the Dallas Police Department, the Dallas Sheriff's Office, my office, and Captain Will Fritz has been in charge of it.
How would you describe his mood during the questioning?
Very arrogant. Has been all along.
What do you still say, Chief?
He just denies everything.
How do you sum him up as a man, based on your experience with criminal types?
Oh, I think he's a man that planned this murder weeks or months ago and has laid his plans carefully and carried them out and has planned at that time what he's going to tell the police that are questioning him at present.
As we understand it, no one actually saw this man pull the trigger of the rifle that apparently killed the president. Is that correct?
That is correct up to this time in our investigation.
What about ballistic test, Chief?
The ballistic test, we haven't had a final report, but it is, I understand, will be favorable.
You think the smudged fingerprints that have been found on the rifle which killed the president will be able to establish the identity of the killer?
We hope so, but I couldn't say positive at this time that they will be.
Well, you enough to convict him?
I don't know whether it would be enough to convict him or not if we can put his prints on the rifle, or certainly would connect him with a rifle.
We want to say this, that this investigation has been carried on jointly by the FBI, the Secret Service, the Rangers, and the Dallas Police Department. Captain Fritz has been in charge.
Has he made any admissions at all about the shooting of the police officer?
No, he denies everything.
I would say that without any doubt, he's the killer. The law says beyond a reasonable doubt and to a moral certainty, which there's no question that he was the killer of President Kennedy.
And will you ask death in the electric chair for Lee Oswald?
Yes, sir. We'll ask the death penalty.
How many cases of this type have you been involved in? That is when the death penalty is involved.
Since I've been district attorney, I've asked the death penalty in 24 cases.
And how many times have you attained it?
23.
In this man's apparent subversive background, was there any surveillance? Were police aware of his presence in Dallas?
We in the police department here did not know he was in Dallas. I understand the FBI did know that he was in Dallas.
Chief, do you normally have a practice for the FBI to inform the police?
Yes.
Chief, do you have...
We did not have...
But you were not informed.
We had not been informed of this man.
Chief, do you have any concern for the safety of your prisoner in view of the high feeling among the people of Dallas over the assassination of the president?
No, but precautions will be taken, of course.
Being let out by Captain Fritz.
Oswald has been shot. There's a man with a gun.
Oswald expired at 1:07 p.m. He died.
If he had lived, of course, he would be entitled to counsel. I think he is entitled to counsel now, and I think all of America now is entitled to have counsel for Lee Oswald so that we can find out, actually, what took place on November 22nd.
1 week after the assassination, President Kennedy's successor, Lyndon B. Johnson, appointed a president's commission with Chief Justice Earl Warren as chairman. The other members were Senator Richard Russell of Georgia, Senator John Sherman Cooper of Kentucky, Representative Hale Boggs, Louisiana, Representative Gerald R. Ford, Michigan, Alan W. Dulles, former director of the CIA, and John J. McCloy, former chairman, Chase Manhattan Bank.
Yes, I'm, of course, charging the government with not only suppressing information,
I'm charging the FBI and the Secret Service with operating this case from a theory that Oswald was the assassin, that he acted alone, and I'm charging them with pursuing investigation only along those lines and having no interest in any information which indicates anything contrary to their preconceived theory.
This film is a brief for the defense. Let us examine some of the preconceptions of the Dallas police and the FBI.
And Chief, we understand you have the results of the paraffin test which were made to determine whether Oswald had fired a weapon. Can you tell us what those tests showed?
I understand that it was positive.
Paraffin test positive.
What does that mean?
It only means that he fired a gun.
What about the paraffin test?
Yes, I haven't gone into that. The paraffin test showed that he had recently fired a gun. It was on both hands.
Both hands?
Both hands.
Gordon Shanklin, the FBI agent in charge at Dallas, added, quote, a paraffin test used to determine whether a person has fired a weapon recently was administered to Oswald shortly after he was apprehended Friday, 1 hour after the assassination. It showed that particles of gunpowder from a weapon, probably a rifle, remained on Oswald's cheek and hands, close quote. The test, however, showed no gunpowder on either hands or cheek, and no nitrates on Oswald's face. Confronted with but one possible interpretation, that the paraffin test results were consistent with innocence, the commission concluded that the test, formally presented as a cornerstone of the case against Oswald, was, quote, completely unreliable.
Investigation showed he was the only one missing employee. This description and name was broadcast.
That explanation is inadequate in two respects. First, Oswald was not the only missing employee. 48 employees were outside of the building when the shots were fired, and others left just after the shots, and many were not permitted to re-enter, and thus were absent when the police search began. And secondly, the Warren Commission report states, the police never mentioned Oswald's name in their broadcast descriptions before his arrest.
He went from there to the bus, caught a bus at Lamar Street, went part of the way to his address over in Oak Cliff.
Was Oswald on the bus?
While on the bus, he said, told the bus driver the president had just been shot, and later told a driver that he'd been shot and laughed at the time.
This would indicate that it was his intention to kill the president.
Yes.
But the laugh wasn't Oswald's. The only source of the story, the bus driver, identified 16-year-old Milton Jones as the laugher. When asked if he could identify Oswald as his passenger, the driver replied, I could not do it. I wouldn't do it at the lineup, and I wouldn't do it now. No, sir, I couldn't. I could not identify him. Yet the Dallas police reports of their police lineups state that the bus driver made a, quote, positive identification, close quote, of Oswald. The bus driver denied that that was true. The commission concluded, quote, the commission is satisfied that the lineups were conducted fairly. The commission asked three master rifle experts to duplicate Oswald's feat of November 22nd. They failed. Was Oswald more skilled than the commission's experts? This is an interview with Sergeant Nelson Delgado, who served in the Marine Corps with Lee Harvey Oswald. Sergeant Delgado appeared as a witness before the Warren Commission. Sergeant, prior to your Warren Commission testimony, were you interviewed by agents of the FBI?
Yes, they came to my home in South Jersey to interview me. The first two visits, they came just to get my story, what I knew about Oswald, how close we were, and things like that. After that, then they started, the questions were tending to break my story down.
Sergeant, where are you now stationed?
Down in one of the missile sites in South Jersey. Have been there since prior to the assassination of Kennedy. I've been here now for 3 years, and this month, the 20th to be exact, I'm leaving for Vietnam.
When did you first meet Oswald?
Just prior to the Christmas of 1958, Oswald reported into our unit. Oswald and I got along very good together. We were, like I said, working the same jobs. Involving aircrafts and radar, we controlled them from the ground and ran intercepts.
Was Oswald interested in guns?
They say he was a gun enthusiast, but I recall many instances where we stood inspections and he was constantly being gigged for having a dirty weapon and then taking improper care of his weapon. He was always reminded when he had to clean the weapon, never took it upon himself to do so.
Do you have personal knowledge of Oswald's ability with a rifle?
At the range, he couldn't prove by me that he was a good shot. As any person who's ever served in the armed forces could tell you, there's a part in the qualification that calls for rapid firing. This is done with 10 shots, 8 in a clip and 2 that you load by hand. They give you maybe 30 or 45 seconds to be exact to fire these 10 rounds. Well, when you fire these, then you stand away from your firing position until everyone has finished firing. Then the targets are brought down and scored. The targets are run back up and they're dissed for the number that you have hit, 5s, 4s, 3s, or misses. Well, in Oswald's particular case, it was quite funny to look at because he would get a couple of discs. Maybe out of the possible 10, he'll get 2 or 3 Maggie's drawers. Now, these are a red flag that's on a long pole, and this is running from left to right on the target itself. And you don't see this on a firing line too often, not the Marine firing line. And it's, you can't help but notice it when you're seeing discs, round cylinder things coming up and down, and farther on down the line, you see a flag waving. Well, that was going to catch your eye anyway. And we thought it was funny that Oswald's getting these Maggie's drawers so rapidly, one after the other. And this is why I can't say, think that he could be a good shot, because a good shot doesn't pull this. He'll pull a 3, but he won't pull a Maggie's drawers. It's a complete miss.
How did the FBI react to your statement that Oswald was a poor shot?
They tried to disprove this. They did not like the idea when I came up with the statement that Oswald, as far as I knew, Oswald was a very poor shot.
Do you feel that the agents of the FBI actually tried to get you to change your statement that Oswald was a poor shot?
Yes, sir, I definitely do.
9 wounds, 4 to President Kennedy, 5 to Governor Connally, presented the commission with another puzzle. Did 2 bullets do all of the damage? A frame-by-frame study of film taken at the time proved that 2 of the shots occurred within 1.8 seconds. An impossibility. The commission agreed that the rifle could not be operated that quickly. Commission counsel Rankin stated, to say they were hit by separate bullets is synonymous with saying that there were 2 assassins. But 2 assassins did not fit, so a new assumption was made. 1 bullet struck both the president and the governor, a 1-bullet, 2-victim theory. Necessity dictated that the theory become a conclusion. However, Governor Connally, in a press conference,
unquestionably, when the first shot was fired, I recognized it as a shot. I thought of nothing else but that it was a rifle shot. I turned to my right. I had time to think. I had time to react. And I turned to my right to look back over my right shoulder to see if I could see anything unusual, and particularly to see if I could catch him out of the corner of my eye. Because I immediately
thought, the president.
Because I immediately thought of an assassination attempt. The moment I heard the shot, I didn't see anything except just the general blur of waving, of people moving. Nothing really unusual. I did not see the president out of the corner of my eye, and I was in the process of turning back to look over my left shoulder. And had about come to the point where I was looking straight forward again when I felt the impact of the bullet that hit me.
Which entered the right posterior chest, close to the shoulder blade, and coursed downward along the chest wall, taking out and fragmenting a portion of the 5th rib on the right. The bullet then emerged from the chest, evidently struck his right wrist, fracturing the lower portion of the right radius, and then entered the left thigh where it was spent.
I am convinced beyond any question of a doubt that the first shot that was fired did not hit me. Then I was hit. And I was not then, and I have no memory, no recollection of the sound of the shot that hit me. And beyond any question of a doubt, the third shot did not hit me.
Pictures taken at the time of the assassination confirm the eyewitness testimony, for they reveal that Governor Connally reacted to the bullet considerably after President Kennedy did. Two members of the commission seem to agree, Mr. Dulles. But you would then have the problem, you would think, if Connally had been hit at the same time, would have reacted in the same way, and not reacted much later, as these pictures show. Mr. McCloy, that is right. Mr. Dulles, because the wounds would have been inflicted. Mr. McCloy, that is what puzzles me. Mr. Dulles, that is what puzzles me. The commission countered with the news that Governor Connally was merely struck a glancing blow to a rib, thereby explaining his delayed reaction. The hard evidence which conclusively demolishes the commission's case is that more grains of metal were found in one of the governor's wounds than were missing from this bullet. The commission's autopsy expert, Commander Humes, testified, "I do not understand how it could possibly have left fragments in the wrist. As to the fragments in the governor's thigh wound," Commander Humes added, "I cannot conceive of where they came from this missile."
Next week on The End of Innocence, the JFK assassination, we'll examine the second part of Mark Lane's 1967 fascinating documentary on the assassination. Next week, we will hear from witnesses that were there in Dealey Plaza as the shooting took place, and also witnesses that were present at the J.D. Tippit shooting. I want to say thanks once again to everybody who have purchased my book and all of those that have sent me emails and commented about it. I've received hundreds of emails, and I intend to answer each and every one. Book sales are going far better than expected, and it's still on sale on Amazon. Just search for The End of Innocence, The Assassination of John F. Kennedy. You can also find links to purchase the book at www.endofinnocencejfk.com. Please send any comments you have about the book or this podcast to endofinnocencejfk@gmail.com. We'll see you next week.